dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is always a delight and really an honor to have with us a man who has spent a lifetime in the service of our country, both by virtue of the work he has performed in a variety of capacities, notably, but not exclusively, in the intelligence community, as well as thanks to the intelligence, the native intelligence he brings to so many topics. He is truly a Renaissance man. His name is Charles Sam Faddis. He has served, as I mentioned, as a senior CIA operations officer, including being among the first on the ground in Iraq, leading a team there before the liberation of the place. He's also been a chief of station and head of the Central Intelligence Agency's Terrorist Weapons of Mass Destruction Unit. He has served in the Army as a tank officer. He has served as well as an attorney for the state of Washington. He has been an incredible public servant, but also has now been rendering great service to our country, as well as, I think, to those of us interested in topics that touch on its national security, broadly defined. As the senior partner at Artemis and as a contributing editor at And Magazine, a great online resource. Sam Faddis, it is a delight to have you with us. I could go on and on, but we do have a show to do, actually. So let me cut short the tributes to you and my appreciation for all you do for us, past and present. But welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us. And thank you for giving us a full hour of your time. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm grateful to you for being able to do so at some length.
My privilege to be here, Frank. Thank you.
Well, Sam, I want to pick up on some themes that I explored also at length yesterday in a marvelous program with Diana West, who, as you know, has written extensively on the problem of, well, I think of it as the enemy within and the challenge that it poses to an open, free society like ours, especially having gone to some lengths over the years to deprecate those who worry about enemies inside our country. You have obviously, in your time in the intelligence community, spent a lot of your waking hours thinking about, worrying about, and working on the challenges that we're facing from foreign enemies. But also, I know you have, particularly of late, been writing about the danger posed by one of those emanating from overseas, but that is inside our country. It's a terrorist organization known as Hezbollah. I'd like you to talk a little bit about what we know about Hezbollah and its operations inside our country at this point, and then we'll talk a little bit about what we need to be doing to reckon with it.
Right. Well, of course, Hezbollah is basically a creature of Iran. I don't mean to say that it's as simple as Tehran snaps his fingers and Hezbollah does exactly what they want, but they are joined at the hip, and they have Hezbollah has a foreign arm, the Islamic Jihad organization, specifically dedicated to operations outside of Lebanon, and has a very strong working relationship with components of the Iranian intelligence and special operations apparatus like the Quds Force. And what we know is that Hezbollah has operatives on our soil, and that those operatives are actively working, planning, preparing, casing for attacks inside the United States. That's not speculation. That's not a suspicion. We have, in fact, over the last couple of years, arrested at least three such operatives. And these guys are not aspirational. They are not guys who sat around in their mother's basement and watched too many videos on YouTube and decided to go join ISIS. These are guys that were sent here in some cases a decade ago by Hezbollah, having been highly trained and then are directed to case targets like the Empire State Building and major other targets, and do all of the detailed work in preparation for mass casualty attacks on our soil. And there's no reason, and that we also know that that's just because we've arrested a handful of them doesn't mean that they're not still doing it right now.
Right. We'll come back to this question about what do we know and are we on top of it in a moment, Sam. But just to stay with some of the personal stories here, at least one of these three operatives was actually a naturalized American citizen, which gives rise to a whole nother set of problems in terms of trying to monitor and ascertain, you know, what they're up to. Do we have any sense, Sam Faddis, as our former terrorist weapons of mass destruction duty officer at the CIA, do we have any sense of the magnitude of Hezbollah's presence in the United States? I've heard tell of quite a number of cells, more than just two or three individuals, cells operating here. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, that sounds absolutely correct. Just because we've arrested and taken off the board three guys, nobody should draw from that the inference that those were the only three guys. Very much to the contrary. This is a very large, very, very sophisticated operation. And of course, we have seen Hezbollah in conjunction with the Iranians stage attacks all over the world. We know exactly what their playbook is. I worked against them for years. You can bet a lot of money that we have a very robust presence here, and they're looking at all kinds of targets, and not just looking at them, but you need to understand they're actually making the plans and the preparations and getting together the material so that when the direction comes and the button is pressed, the attacks can begin immediately. That's the objective.
Sam, you have, among other things, warned us about the vulnerabilities of this country to such attacks in your book, Willful Neglect: The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security. I also would commend to our listeners a piece that you've recently written in AND magazine entitled Hezbollah, a Case Study. Is the FBI up to the task? Talk a little bit about how the FBI handled these particular three Hezbollah associated individuals and what it tells us about whether the FBI is up to the task or not.
Right. Well, fundamentally, law enforcement and intelligence organizations are completely different organisms. They may look similar from the outside, but they're not. A law enforcement organization identifies somebody who's committed a crime, and then they arrest them, take them off the playing field, and produce the evidence necessary for them to be prosecuted. An intelligence organization looks at that person, identifies them, and then starts considering options, like how about we leave him in place and monitor him? Or how about we approach him, give him a choice, you know, like an offer he can't refuse, go to prison for a very long time, or now become a double agent for us working against your masters. In all of these cases with the FBI, what they did was the predictable for a law enforcement organization. They arrested these guys once they were identified as Hezbollah operatives. And they're now being prosecuted, which is wonderful that they're off the playing field. But as fast as they were arrested, you know that Hezbollah replaced them.
And this is a point that I want to pick up on the other side of a short break, Sam Faddis. That and much more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're talking for a full hour with Sam Faddis. I call him a Renaissance man. That doesn't really even do justice to him. He's certainly skilled in so many different areas that we are anxious to exploit in terms of his insights, his knowledge, his actual experience in protecting our country. And Sam, you were talking a bit, as a longtime intelligence professional, about the shortcomings of a law enforcement approach to dealing with foreign, hostile, very dangerous operatives of the kind that Hezbollah has been insinuating into our country. We think in some numbers, when we don't roll them up through a more careful, systematic, disciplined approach, turning them, if possible, at the minimum, figuring out what their full networks are before you shut them down. What does that mean in terms of the actual security implications of the operation?
Well, what it means is that instead of having this guy off the playing field and at best knowing what Hezbollah was up to until the day you arrested him, at best, well, you know what he knew. You now, first of all, know current intelligence. Every time, every new communication he gets from Beirut, you know about it real time. When they send the attack team and he goes to meet them, you know that. You know who they are, where they meet. You also have the capacity to control if you double him, if you make him, in effect, now working for you while still pretending to work for Hezbollah. You control the flow of information back to Hezbollah. So the Brits did this to the Germans during the World War II. They doubled every single German agent sent into the United Kingdom, which meant that everything that Berlin heard from every source they had on the ground in the United Kingdom was, in fact, a script written by British intelligence and fed to them. And it would give us the same capacity. We did, by the way, the same thing in northern Iraq in the run-up to the invasion that you referenced in the introduction. The Iraqis sent literally dozens of guys to try to identify the members of my team and lure them into ambushes and abduct them or kill them. We doubled a whole bunch of those guys, which gave us, meant we knew everything they were doing. And before they ever sent an assassin, we knew who he was, where he was going, and we apprehended him too.
This is tradecraft, and it's the kind of thing that we need to be doing a lot more. And just staying with the enemy within problem, Sam, I'd like to ask you about another organization that we have reason to believe has been very actively involved here. It's not the Shia version of jihadism, and for that matter, it's not necessarily the violent kind of jihadism. It's one that I consider to be even more dangerous in some respects, especially in a society like ours, and that is what the Sharia supremacists of the Sunni Muslim Brotherhood stripe are engaged in. If there is, in fact, and this has been, I believe, demonstrated in federal court, a mission for the Brotherhood of, quote, destroying Western civilization from within by our hands, that is, this non-believers, and the believers' hands, so that Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religions, unquote. That's taken from a sort of mission statement that is part of a memorandum, the explanatory memorandum written by a top Muslim Brotherhood operative back to headquarters, in his case, in Egypt, back in 1991. If that is in fact afoot, how hard a problem is it for U.S. FBI or others charged with counterintelligence activities to discern and counter if it seems, by and large, we don't even recognize this as an internal threat at all?
Yeah, well, it makes it very, very difficult, as you know. I mean, what it means is you now have individuals in the law enforcement and intelligence community who are effectively afraid politically to go anywhere near many of the folks that they really ought to be watching and looking. I mean, I have never understood this issue with this squeamishness, if I can use that term, in regard to the Muslim Brotherhood. If you look at their platform, if you will, and lay it next to that of Al-Qaeda, they are indistinguishable. They want precisely the same things, and they ask for precisely the same things.
Perhaps somewhat different techniques, at least for the moment, but still, the objective is exactly the same. You're right. So the squeamishness, I personally believe, is a result of a very effective influence operation that the Brotherhood has been running at least since 9/11, and arguably considerably before, and does to this day. And indeed, Sam, it seems to me, based on a lot of study of this, some of the people that you're talking about, we should be monitoring very closely, and in fact, flipping or otherwise rolling up, are people who have access to senior policymakers inside our government. there are organizations that are considered to be the go-to interlocutors with the Muslim community. And I suggest that that is a serious impediment, shall we say, to effective counterintelligence against such enemies within.
Yeah, well, we see, I mean, I concur with everything you just said. And going back to where we were on the other side of the divide for a minute with the Shia, we see the same thing with the Iranians and with Shia groups. I mean, before the Iran nuclear deal was signed, we had members of the biggest propaganda front for the Iranians in the United States in the White House, something like 33 times as that agreement was being drafted.
More or less on the delegation, actually. The National Iranian-American Council, Trita Parsi, was actually participating in some of these negotiations. In fact, I remember famously, Sam, he came out of one of them and he said he was having difficulty, I think he put it, stopping the gloating that he was doing over the great progress that he was helping the Obama administration make in accommodating the Iranians' demands. This is more than a counterintelligence problem, but at some level, it has to do with, do we adequately and properly understand who these characters are and that they're playing for the other team?
Yeah, and back to something that I kind of touched on a few minutes ago. Down at the street level, the impact of all of this in regard to counterintelligence work is what I would call a chilling effect. I mean, if you're a guy who's supposed to be working against these folks, whether we're talking about Muslim Brotherhood, whether we're talking about Hezbollah, whatever we're talking about, and politically all of this is sort of, at a minimum, super sensitive, and you don't have any clear authorization to go near them, well, then you stay clear. Nobody runs, directs an operation. What you have is you give them a buffer. You leave them alone. You learn that nothing good career-wise will come of directing an operation against these individuals.
Sam, wait, break. Actually, it's worse than that, isn't it? Isn't it really the case that people recognize it's a career-ending offense to be trying to do something to counter these fellows? That's the thing that's most concerning to me. Claire Lopez and I wrote a book on the subject, See No Sharia, we called it. It was it's well documented. That's the heart of the matter, it seems to me.
Yeah, I would concur fully. You have a death wish professionally if you want to go try to work these targets. So what do you think a large bureaucracy does? It steers completely away from them.
Sam, you've spent a lot of time in the region, and you know Sharia supremacism firsthand as a result. Am I right that the nature of the doctrine of those who adhere to this political, military, legal program is that when they see the enemy, that would be us, acceding to them or submitting, I guess is the preferred term, that it actually is their tradecraft to redouble their efforts so that far from attenuating this problem, we're actually making it conceivably vastly more dangerous, are we not?
Without question, Frank. I do a lot of speaking, as you know. One of the things I try to get across to people, whether we're talking about Hezbollah in Iran or whether we're talking about Sunni extremism, is, look, it's great that you all in the United States would like to find some accommodation here, some happy neutral ground where we all live together. Why can't we all just get along stuff? They don't want that. That is unacceptable to them. That is not what anybody on the other side of this is seeking. They don't want to just live in peace with you. They want to annihilate you. They want to assimilate you. That is the end game. This is Armageddon. This is biblical stuff.
It's divinely ordained that they must do that, is it not?
Absolutely. They speak in those terms. They talk in those terms. In Iran, there is literally a place where they are waiting for the 12th Imam, who's been in hiding for 1,500 years somehow, to ride out of a well on a horse as an Islamic Superman to lead them to total victory and domination of the entire world.
Yeah, I mean, if people think we're exaggerating that point, let me just note, the government in Iran has actually built, I'm told, a superhighway to facilitate the Mahdi's transit from the well in Qom, I believe, to Tehran. So this is serious stuff, and I'm chuckling here not because it's funny, but because our position, our posture, our attitude towards it, the indifference that we've demonstrated again and again and again, the perception that that's submission is so risky. And again, few people understand that better than you, Sam Faddis, from your time confronting these adversaries mano a mano, as they say, and often over there, but you're recognizing the danger here as well. Sam, when we come back after a short break, I do want to talk to you about another of the enemies within that you've also been addressing yourself to in your writings at AND Magazine and your public speaking, and that would be the red in what we call the red-green axis, the radical left, what they're up to, and whether this rises to another enemy within problem. That and much more with Sam Faddis right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're visiting with one of my favorite guests. He is Charles Sam Faddis, a man of extraordinary accomplishments, both in uniform and out, notably in the Secret Service of the United States, the clandestine Central Intelligence's operations. He has acquitted himself brilliantly in all of these capacities and has shared his insights with us, both in his writings at places like AND Magazine, and in a series of books, I'll just name several of them, Beyond Repair, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. I mentioned earlier Willful Neglect, about the dangerous illusion of homeland security. He's written a novel or two as well, including Barbarossa, about his own experiences inside Iraq in advance of the 2003 invasion there. Sam, I wanted to just pivot a bit because you have also been thinking hard about other threats to our republic, notably from those who seem to be unlikely allies of the Sharia supremacists we were speaking of a moment ago. People on the left, after all, they're, you know, sort of pillars in their community, tend to be people that the Sharia supremacists would actually kill or certainly brutalize, the feminists, the homosexuals, the Jews, the writers and songwriters and artists of other kinds and the like. Yet there is this common cause being made against, it seems, our government. And I guess I'd invite you to just talk a little bit about that red-green axis, and then we'll drill down on the red part of it a bit further.
I think the reality is we live at an incredibly dangerous time when you start talking about the Republican democracy. And maybe that sounds overly dramatic, but I don't think it is at all. I mean, I think what we have now are forces at work where people are really tearing away at the foundations of the Republic. And you, all you got to do is turn on the television and watch the impeachment proceedings and you will see that. But you hear it in the rhetoric of platforms from presidential candidates on the Democratic side. I mean, our man Beto O'Rourke, before he did us all a favor and quit, was, as far as I can tell, announcing that he had intended to ignore the Second Amendment completely and confiscate firearms. Elizabeth Warren tells us every day that she's going to undo the foundations of the Republic and the Electoral College, which is the basis on which all the sovereign states agreed to form a union in the first place. She's going to wink that out of existence. We have what amounts to a Stalinist show trial ongoing in Washington, D.C. all day, every day, where the chairman of Adam Schiff is now of the one committee is now in somehow obtaining the phone records of other congressmen. He's and like launching his own investigation of congressmen who dare to disagree with him. I mean, this is terrifying.
It really speaks, as you say, on so many levels to a disregard for the Constitution of the United States. And I can't help but just note that one of the featured witnesses in yesterday's hearing before the Judiciary Committee Jerry Nadler, its chairman, pulled in as one of the three witnesses to discuss the Constitution and impeachment and what grounds there might be for expelling the President of the United States through that process. A fellow by the name of Noah Feldman, who not only revealed in the course of the testimony that he had actually been promoting the idea that it was a high crime and misdemeanor for the president to tweet on certain subjects. But beyond that, Sam, this is a guy who has been spending a prodigious amount of his life, including in Iraq, where you served, promoting Sharia. And it just the mind sort of reels, especially in light of what we were just talking about. But here you have a leftist who is a champion of this supremacist doctrine that would destroy us, as you said. And the whole thing seems so topsy-turvy. But let me talk to you about something that came up in my conversation yesterday with Dinah West, Sam, and that is the extent to which this problem of identifying and factually recognizing and then properly counteracting those who have as their purpose, well, I guess can be called fundamentally transforming our republic, or alternatively, and perhaps more accurately, simply taking it apart, who aren't necessarily, you know, jihadists, but enabling them, they're on the left. Just talk a little bit more about that, because Stalinist show trial calls up the idea of really totalitarian behavior. Is that what these leftists are now increasingly exposing themselves as being?
Yeah, I think unfortunately that is all true, Frank. And it sounds, once upon a time we probably would have said, okay, maybe this is some kind of bad fiction, but it's not. I mean, I wrote an article back a couple of months ago talking about how I don't understand how I do understand, but I mean, it's just pointing out that we started down a road, or many of these leftists started down this road, and allegedly what we were after was simply the right to be let alone, the equality. Just, I want to have the same rights as you. Somehow along the way, it transformed to, no, I actually want to force you to do what I want you to do. It's not we get to live in different ways. No, you must now live the way I want. I am going to, and in fact, I'm going to transform every element of not only your government, but increasingly your society. I'm going to tell your children what to think. I'm going to tell them I'm going to indoctrinate them on issues like gender. Could there be something more squarely in the wheelhouse of mom and dad than that? But no, we are now going to literally indoctrinate you. And if you do not comply, increasingly you will be told your rights are taken away. You must shut up now. You cannot speak. If what you say offends me, you have no right to free speech. And if you start collectively looking at all that, pretty soon you don't have anything remotely resembling the democracy that we have now.
Yeah. Freedom of speech, of course, is one of those particularly fundamental aspects of our free republic and constitutional rights. And Sam, as you look at this, and then you kind of sort of alluded to it there a moment ago, if your speech, or my speech for that matter, winds up offending the sort of diktat of the left, increasingly that is, if not defined as hate speech or otherwise a punishable offense in their book, certainly something that should be, as in totalitarian societies elsewhere, you know, something that precludes you from enjoying certain benefits, certain privileges, certain opportunities. That is absolutely toxic, is it not, for the kind of country that we have been privileged to know and love and serve?
Yeah, well, it's a death knell. I mean, look, the founding fathers didn't say you can all talk as long as you say nice things and as long as nobody gets their feelings hurt. These were tough guys. They lived through hard times. They fought an incredibly long, bloody war. I have said many times, half their meetings were conducted in taverns. What do you think those meetings were like? Nobody spoke in muted terms. This was often bruising competition of ideas. And what they said was, at the end of the day, the best ideas will win out. And this is how you get there, is by having this free competition of ideas. And as soon as somebody says they have the right to control within very broad boundaries what's said, well, then we're done. That is not free speech. Because if somebody gets to define what can be said, then, well, pretty soon a lot of people don't get to talk at all. And talk about ironic. If we rolled back the tape a few decades, somebody advocating equal rights for same-sex couples could easily have been told at that time and place, that idea offends me. You can't talk about it. I mean, we would, you know, you can't, you either have free speech or you do not. And we're playing with fire. I mean, we're really, as I said earlier, we're tearing away at the foundations of the Republic.
Yeah, this is such an important warning. Sam, something else we've talked about on the program in the past, and I just want to stitch it into this particular conversation, because it does seem as though one of the other lines of attack on the Republic is now an unaccountable bureaucracy that seems to be imbued with many of these leftist proclivities, or that has been penetrated or at least submissive to some of these Sharia supremacist ones. The red-green axis seems much in evidence to me. What is the takeaway most immediately from this impeachment process that you would like to leave with us as a man who has lived and dealt with the swamp for a long time?
Well, I find the impeachment process in its totality incredibly destructive. You can hate Donald Trump all you want. You can oppose his policies, be offended by his behavior. That's fine. Go beat him at the ballot box. That's what the Constitution says. We are now subverting the Constitution and going in the interest of defeating him politically. We are destroying, again, foundational pieces of the country. It is now a matter of, win at all costs, destroy this man, and in the process, it doesn't matter how much damage we do. Yeah, I thought that Professor Turley, speaking the other day, who made clear that he is no supporter of Donald Trump, hit this right on the head, which is what you are doing right now in Congress is completely wrong, illegal, unconstitutional. You are doing this purely because you hate this man so much. You don't care how much damage you do to this nation.
Right. It's political warfare. And the ends justify the means, which is, of course, a hallmark of the totalitarian left. Sam, we have to pause for one more second. When we come back, I want to talk with you about some of the things we can do to try to rescue our republic and preserve our rights. That and much more with Charles Sam Faddis right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are visiting for this full hour, and now entering our fourth and final segment of that hour, with Sam Faddis, a man who has, as I've indicated, contributed mightily to both our understanding of what's afoot and tried over many, many years to protect us against some of its worst aspects. I want to commend to you all in particular again, Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security, as really required reading. And Sam, we've talked about different aspects of the challenge to our homeland and its security. And I want to leave people with some sense, both of hope and of what they can do in the face of what seems to be this growing, well, impetus behind the efforts to take down our beloved country and its republic. You've written a piece at END recently, and magazine that is, about using one of the left's techniques against it, which I found quite interesting and somewhat hopeful. Tell us about sanctuaries being used for good instead of undermining our country.
Right. Well, it's probably not getting as much press as it would if it was something that was being pushed by the left. But there's a very growing Second Amendment sanctuary movement in the United States, and that is literally county by county, citizens getting their county council or board of supervisors or whatever it is, depending on what state we're in, to adopt a resolution declaring the county a sanctuary, which effectively says we're not going to enforce any laws here contrary to the Second Amendment. Which I should add, does not say you're allowed to keep a gun in your closet to stop a burglar or have a gun to go hunting, although you do. It says very clearly you have a right to keep a firearm because we want to have a well-regulated militia to ensure the continuation of the republic and the rule of law. So, and this is growing across, and this is growing across the country. It's very big down in Virginia. I'm up in Pennsylvania. There is a movement up here as well now. And I think this is what it's a good example of. I mean, on the one hand, I find it a sad commentary that that's where we are as a nation, that citizens have to be reminding us like in this way that we have this right. On the other hand, it's a great example of citizens saying, look, I'm not just going to sit here and cry about this. I'm not just going to watch the country go to hell. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to assert my rights as a citizen. And I'm going to make sure that we don't lose the republic that we have. And I think that's the mindset we all need to have. Don't just turn off the tube and go numb and complain to your buddies over a beer about it. Get involved.
Yeah. Amen. Let's talk about some specific things that people might get involved with. Sam, we're talking about all of this, of course, in the context of an election that is looming, that is, as you say, the way historically we have addressed national choices like those that are being bruited at the moment and that are being sort of subverted or dictated by these extra constitutional means. We don't do politics here as an organization that is nonpartisan, but we do work on shaping the policy battle space. And I just would like to ask you to share with us some of your thoughts on things that the American people need to be thinking about as they decide the directions they want the country to go, particularly in sort of these realms that are going to affect our freedoms, maybe even our survival as a nation. And Sam, I counterintelligence seems to be a pretty arcane subject, but that does seem to me to be something that the American people ought to be insisting their government get a grip on, do better with, and really practice professionally as hostile powers do against us.
Yeah, without question, whether we're talking about Hezbollah or whether we're talking other threats from within.
Or for that matter, others that we haven't talked about, Russia and China.
The Russia, the Chinese, but I mean, unfortunately, I would also say that at this point in reality, that the size and scope of the federal government and what has happened intellectually and philosophically inside at least the senior ranks of many agencies has in itself become a threat to the republic. And I do not say that as an attack on the average man or woman doing his job working for the federal government. I was a federal employee for a long time, my father, my brother. But that edifice itself is now threatening democracy. You made reference to the deep state earlier. That is a real thing. It is a permanent fourth branch of government, unmentioned in the Constitution, and not a single one of those individuals is unelected. And yet they increasingly believe they have the authority to challenge the president of the United States himself, not just challenge him, but depose him.
Sam, that brings me to kind of the final point here. We have an expectation and arguably a right under our Constitution to the rule of law, to the rule of law applying to everybody. One law for all, I think, is a central aspect of our republic. And yet what we've been seeing, notably in the bureaucracy from your old intelligence community, personified by the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, John Brennan, and the former director of the FBI, James Comey, is really now a program, a determined effort to mount, to your point, a coup d'etat against our republic. Just very quickly, Sam, what must the public do? What can it do to insist that there be accountability and consequences for those in the deep state who have engaged in this kind of behavior? And is it likely to be forthcoming?
I think you have put your finger on one of the key issues here, which is there must be accountability. There is no question that we witnessed a coup attempt against the President of the United States. Quite frankly, there is no question that we are witnessing yet another coup attempt right now against the President. When you have somebody like Brennan who undertakes these actions, he cannot simply then be allowed to walk away saying, oh, well, better luck next time. If you attempted to depose a sitting President of the United States, abuse your authority, you need to face consequences, which ultimately means there have to be prosecutions here. People need to be charged. Somebody needs to make Mr. Brennan explain how it is that he told us for 2 years that he knew without reservation the president was a traitor and had colluded with the Russians. And yet, in the end, there is no evidence whatsoever to support that that was ever true. There have to be consequences. And if we don't hold people accountable, well, then we really are done, because you will see no end to this.
Yeah. Again, this is in the context of the lead up to an election. When do you expect to see, Sam, whether the rule of law is going to be served here? Is it going to be something we get out of this report from the Inspector General of the Justice Department? He's been disappointing to date, I have to say. Is it likely to be something that we see from John Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut that is supposedly, you know, investigating carefully these conspirators? Is it going to take, you know, an election and a change of the Congress to make sure that we actually do get to the bottom of it, or all of the above?
Well, I share your skepticism about the Inspector General. If you required me to put money on a proposition right now, I would say that the Inspector General's report is not going to help us at all. It's going to dodge the bullet and reach some lukewarm conclusions and basically take a pass.
As have his previous ones. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. I remain hopeful that Durham, who apparently is a no-nonsense guy working for Barr, who I believe is a true professional and a constitutional scholar, amongst other things, I remain hopeful that we will see ultimately indictments coming out of that. I hope to God that is true.
Amen. Amen. Sam Pattis, we have to leave it at that. I, again, thank you and salute you for your extensive service to our country in the uniform of the United States Army as a very accomplished CIA operative, as an assistant attorney general for the state of Washington, among other things, as well as an accomplished author, former candidate for Congress, and so much more. Sam, you're an extraordinary example of the best in our country, and we always appreciate our visits with you. Thank you for a full hour of your time today. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.